Shus Harav, Shus Harabanu. The Navi Yeshaya tells us in Perek Chavov, Yosafta Lagoy Hashem, Yosafta Lagoy Nechbodato. It's a very difficult pasuk. So the Medrash interprets, the Medrash translates the pasuk to mean the Yalkut Shemani, and that pasuk interprets Yosafta Lagoy Hashem. You have added to the Jewish people Yomim Tovim, additional holidays. And the Medrash comments, Ovid the Elilim, when the other nations of the world, Imatom Arba Lahem Yomim Tovim, if you give them holidays, how do they celebrate? Heim Ochlim Vishoisim Upochazim, they eat and drink, and they fool around, they dance. Venichnosim Lebate Tartayois and Lebate Karkisoyas, they go to the movies, they go to the theaters, and what do they do there? Machise Moischa Bidarcheim Uvmaaseim. And they anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu with what they do in their celebrations of their holidays. Aval Yisrael, when you give them Yom Tov, Yosafta Lagoy, Hashem, when you give them holidays, Ochlim, Vishoisim, Vesmechim, they eat, they drink, and they celebrate. V'nechnasim lebati knesiyos, they come, get together to shul. Or lebati midrashis, they gather together in mesibos and yeshivas. V'marbim betfilos, and they offer special prayers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'marbim b'korbanos, and they give special korbanos to Hashem. Hashem is honored. Yosafta l'goy nichbarato. When you add on Yom Tovim to the Jewish people, Hashem is honored by the Yom Tovim. Problem, however, is it really permissible to add Yom Tovim to those that we have in the Chumash? The very last pasuk in the Kriyas HaTorah that we read this morning, the very last pasuk in the book of Vayikra reads, Ela HaMitzvos VaHamishpatim, these and only these, Ela, the Talmud comments, and the Torah Skaranim comments, these and only these are the mitzvahs that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. And the Talmud comments, Mikan, from this pasuk we derive, Shein Novi Rasho LaChadish Dova Meyato, that you're not permitted to add on any more mitzvos, any more Yom Tovim. Even if a Novi wants to institute a Yom Tov, it's forbidden. Certainly if you don't have a prophet, it's forbidden. So how can the Medrash on the Pasuk in Yeshaya explain, Yosafta L'goy Nechbarato, we add on Yom Tovim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is honored by these holidays. How can we add on Yom Tovim if the Pasuk says that it's forbidden? You're not allowed to add on Yom Tovim, even if a Novi tells you to. This is a violation of Baal Tesif. We know that throughout the generations, private individuals or families or communities would celebrate on special occasions, and they would celebrate every year in commemoration of that celebration, of that special occasion. But this is only for private families or for communities, but not for the whole Klal Yisrael. If the entire Jewish nation wants to celebrate a Yom Tov, so the Gemara says that you're faced with a problem of Eila HaMitzvos. And in fact, the Yerushalmi in Maseches Megillah says that when in the days of Nes Purim, Mordechai and Esther suggested that the Rabbanim should institute a Yom Tov, so the Rabbanim said, we're not permitted to. Eila HaMitzvos. You're not allowed to institute a new Yom Tov. So how can we institute a new Yom Tov today? So the answer is, but they did institute Purim. So what was Taka the answer? Why were they permitted to institute the Yom Tov of Purim? If they suggested, let's make a Yom Tov of Purim, and the Rabbanim said, you're not allowed to, it says in the Torah, Eila HaMitzvos. And Eila means these, and only these are the mitzvahs that should be celebrated, that should be observed by all the Jewish people. And if you institute a new Yom Tov that should be celebrated world over by the Jewish people, this is a new Yom Tov, it's in violation of Baal Tosef. If you're not permitted to add on something. So why did they Taka add on the Yom Tov of Purim? So the commentaries tell us that when you build a Beis HaMikdash, you are obligated to celebrate. It's a pasuk, and next week said, beginning of Chumash Bamidbar, the Ramban says on Parshas Naso, and the Ramban writes in the Sefer HaMitzvos as well, when you build a Beis HaMikdash, you are obligated to celebrate. It's one of the Taryag Mitzvos. The Ramban says that's one. It doesn't come up that often when you build a Beis HaMikdash. We don't build so many Beit HaMikdashes. The later poskim say, we do. It does come up very often when you build a shul. Because the shul has the status of a mikdash miyat. The prophet Yecheskel says that the Beis HaMikdash, the temple will be destroyed, and the Jews will be sent into Golus, and there they will have a miniature Beis HaMikdash, and the Talmud says that miniature Beis HaMikdash is alluding to the Bati Knesios and the Bati Midrashos, all of the shuls and all of the yeshivas that we have all over the world. And the poskim say, whenever you build a shul, whenever you build a yeshiva, it's a mitzvah. According to some, it's a mitzvah min haTorah, because it's a mikdash miyat to have a Chanukah's beis hamikdash. It's a mikdash miyat to have a Chanukah's beis haKnesses to celebrate. You can't bring korbanos, but you have to celebrate in some fashion or another. So we know there is a mitzvah to celebrate on the occasion of the building of the beis hamikdash. So the commentaries point out, not only is there a mitzvah to celebrate, not only is there an obligation to celebrate when you build a beis hamikdash, although there is no obligation, but it is permissible to celebrate every year in commemoration of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, or although there is no obligation, but it's permissible to celebrate when you have an Aschalta de Geulah, when you have done something which is going to lead to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. The term Aschalta de Geulah is not a term that was coined in the 20th century. The beginning of the redemption, the term appears in the Talmud, before the whole Zionist movement began, before Herzl was even born. Aschalta de Geulah is a halachic term. It's not a political term. It's a halachic term. There are two halachic ramifications to this concept. But first you have to know what Geulah is. You have to know what redemption is in order to know what the beginning of the redemption is. So the Ramban tells us in his commentary to Chumash that the definition of Geulah is the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And the process to build the temple, according to the Talmud, is a three-step process. You have to first, the Talmud tells us, first, you have to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. The Talmud tells us, Gimel mitzvos nitztabi Yisrael b'chnisosim la'aretz. When the Jewish people enter into Eretz Yisrael, they have to do three mitzvahs in this order. And you cannot reverse the order. The first mitzvah is lahamid lahamelach, to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. The second mitzvah is a difficult mitzvah. The first mitzvah is also a difficult mitzvah, to establish a Jewish government. That Baruch Hashem has been taken care of. We were fortunate, other people took care of it with their lives. The second mitzvah, the Gemara says, it has to be done in order, is lahachri zara shel Amalek, to wipe out the nation of Amalek. And the Talmud stresses that this mitzvah has not yet been fulfilled, and it will have to be fulfilled l'maaseh HaMashiach, when the ultimate third temple will be built. After the establishment of the government in Eretz Israel, there will be a nation whose policy it will be to wipe out the Jewish people, who will be defined as Amalek, even if they may not necessarily be the biological descendants of the original Amalekim. They too will have the status of Amalek, and will be incumbent upon us as a mitzvah to wipe out that nation. It's a difficult mitzvah, it's an unfortunate mitzvah, but there's a mitzvah. A mitzvah like all of the other mitzvahs. And the third mitzvah that has to be fulfilled, dafke, in that order, is the binyan beis hamikdash. So that according to the Talmud, we have a program, we have a set program. The geula is defined as building of the beis hamikdash, and the aschalta of the geula, the beginning of the geula, according to the Talmud, is either the first step or the second step. You're up to the third step, you already have the geula. The first step is either the establishment of the government in Eretz Yisrael, which is going to lead up to the building of the temple. Because the Talmud tells us that we do not have permission to establish a government in Eretz Yisrael if we do not plan to build a temple, just to have a secular state. So then the non-Jews are right that we're not entitled to Eretz Yisrael. When God promised the land of Israel to Abraham, Avraham Avinu asked, "Bamo eida ki ir Hashenu?" What zechus? What I have, what my descendants have to the land of Israel. So God answered, "Choli eglu mishuleshes," and the Talmud interprets, as the Targum Unkelis comments, translates. Targum Unkelis gives translation, it doesn't give any commentary. Targum Unkelis is not a medrash. The Targum translates, and Rashi points out, Choli Eglu Mishaleshis means, Bishchus HaKorbanos. I give you and I give your descendants the right to Eretz Yisrael, because this will lead up to Binyan Beis HaMikdash. You are not entitled to Eretz Yisrael if you do not plan to build a Beis HaMikdash. Eretz Yisrael is ours as the first step, as an Aschalta de Geulah. If we plan to do the second step, they will lead up ultimately to the third step of building a Beis HaMikdash. So the commentaries on the Talmud tell us that in the days of the Nes Purim, when the issue was raised, do we have permission to establish a Yontif? You cannot just make Yomim Tovim at will. You cannot just establish a holiday that should be celebrated by the Jews all over the world. This is a violation of Valtosiv. So the commentaries explain, although the obligation, the mitzvah to celebrate, the mitzvah min haTorah, the biblical obligation to celebrate only applies when you actually build the temple, but if something occurs which is clearly an aschalta de geulah, this is leading up to the building of the temple, you have the right, it's rishus, it's optional, to celebrate in anticipation of building of the temple. The actual obligation to celebrate min ha-Torah, the biblical obligation, is when you actually build the Beis HaMikdash. In commemoration of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, that's already rishus, that's not obligatory. And in anticipation of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, that too is rishus. So in the days of Mordechai v'Esther, the holiday of Purim was established because the Chachamim in that generation felt that this Nes Purim is going to lead up to the building of the second temple. That's how the Nesivis writes in his commentary on the Megillas Esther, and that's how the Sfasemis writes in his several of his drushes on Purim, and that's how the Poskim assume that the reason why Purim was established is because they felt that the wiping out of Amalek in their generation was an askal to the Guba. Or because of other reasons, the Talmud has various reasons why they felt that the story of the Nes Purim is going to lead up to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. We do not celebrate today, religious Jews do not celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut or Yom Yerushalayim, just as the people of the United States celebrate July 4th as a secular holiday, just as Yom HaAtzma'ut, as a day of independence. That doesn't have any religious significance. We celebrate it as the day of the establishment of the Medina, which is going to lead up to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And many pointed out when the Rabbanut, when the chief rabbin had established the holiday to be celebrated Yom HaTzmut on the fifth day of Iyar, on the establishment of the government, they said, why should they celebrate the day of establishing the government when the war broke out? Shouldn't we rather celebrate when the war was won? When the Jewish soldiers won the war against the Arabs at the end of the Mohammed HaShikrur? So I think the answer is no. The answer is that the Talmud tells us Aschalta de Geula in the one place where the Talmud speaks of Aschalta de Geula in Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin on the base, the Talmud tells us, how do you know when you're in a period of Aschalta de Geula? So the Gemara says, Melchamos, when there are wars, that's Aschalta de Geula. What wars? Which wars? First World War, Second World War, Spanish-American War, American Revolution, French War, which war? So the simple pshat is, Melchemet HaShichrur, if you have the first step, and building the Beis HaMikdash is establishing a Jewish Medina. And you have people who are not too thrilled about that Medina, and they wage a war. So the beginning of the war is the Aschalta de Geula, not the end of the war when you win the war. They still didn't end the war. There is no peace treaty with the other nations. There's only a peace treaty with Egypt. There's still no peace treaty with the other countries surrounding Eretz Yisrael. There's certainly no peace treaty with the Palestinians. The non-existent nation, in quotation marks, there is no Palestinian nation. There's still no peace treaty with them, with the PLO, the organization. So if there's no peace treaty, we're still in a state of war. So if we cannot celebrate when the war is over, why should you celebrate when the war is over? The Chashmonaim celebrated Yom Tovim every month, Tikkun Donishtik, every other week there was another holiday. They were celebrating because there was a Beis HaMikdash, and they were defending the Beis HaMikdash from attack. They were defending it from being destroyed. So that's why they celebrated. They didn't celebrate because they won a war. You win a war, so you celebrate on that occasion, but you don't establish a Yom Tov. During the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, they had every other week, they had a Yom Tov, which was celebrated in commemoration of victories in the days of the Chashmonaim. What were they celebrating for? Because the Beis HaMikdash was protected from being destroyed. You have a right to establish, you have the obligation to celebrate when you actually build the Beis HaMikdash. And you have a reshus, you have the option of celebrating when you defend the Beis HaMikdash from destruction, when you improve the structure of the Beis HaMikdash, when somebody donates gates, when someone straightens out the Avodas HaKorbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, when the Great Sanhedrin is straightened out, when there are problems in the Sanhedrin, when the Kohen Gadol is straightened out, you look in the book of Megillah Steinis, which lists off the holidays that were celebrated during the period of the Second Temple, literally every other week there was another Yom Tov. And these Yom Tov weren't all one day Yom Tov. They were holidays 2 days in a row, 8 days in a row, half a month in a row, 2 weeks in a row. And all of the Yom Tovim, according to the Talmud, have to do with the preservation, the protection of the Beis HaMikdash, the improvement of the Korbanos, the improvement of the high priesthood, the Kohen Gadol, the improvement of the Sanhedrin, all of the functions of the Beis HaMikdash. So too today, those who feel that they want to celebrate at Yom HaAtzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim are doing so not as a secular holiday. We come to shul, we don't go to a theater, we don't go like the Umas Olam, we're not pochazim, we don't go to Bati Karkasoyes and so on. We come to the Bati Knesios, the Bati Midrashos, we give Shalach HaHodoya to HaKadosh Baruch, we give Tefillah al-Ha'asid. We celebrate as a religious holiday these 2 days, Yom HaAtzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim, because we feel that the establishment of the Medina is the Aschalt of the Gula. Now how do we know that this Medina is going to lead up to the building of the temple? Maybe Chalila the Chalila, maybe circumstances will force the Jewish people in Eretz Israel to give back the land to the Arabs, and then we're going to have to start this story all over again. Maybe we're going to have to conquer the land again, get another Balfour Declaration, get some other, whatever it'll be, maybe we're going to have to start all over again. So this we know from the prophets will not happen. The Nevi'im tell us that there will only be two Churbanos of Eretz Israel. There will be the first Churban Bayis Rishon and the Churban Bayis Sheni. There will not be a third Churban HaMedina, not Churban Bayis HaMikdash. There will not be a third, the second Teicheche. Ramban says the Teicheche that we read this morning in Parashas B'chukaisei corresponds to the Churban Bayis Rishon and the Golus, of the 7 years of Golus Bavel. The Teicheche that we read before Rosh Hashanah in Parashas Kisavoy corresponds to the Churban Bayis Sheni. And there it doesn't speak of Churban HaBayis, it doesn't speak about the Beis HaMikdash, it just speaks about Churban HaMedina. So the Ramban comments based on these two Teicheches and based on Psukim and Novi and the commentaries in the Talmud, statements in the Talmud, that we know from the prophets that will never be a third Churban HaMedina. When there will be a third Medina, if the Medina will be established for the third time, it will never be taken away from the Jewish people. Now what's considered established? Bar Kochba also established the government in Eretz Yisrael. 7 years after the destruction of the Second Temple, he established the government. He was minting coins. We have Bar Kochba coins. Ado Yom Hazeh, we have the coins. That was not considered a government. That was a merit. That was, it went down in history as the revolt of Bar Kochba, the attempted establishment of a government. But history has shown that that was not a government. But it's hard to state now, 40 years after the establishment of Medina, it's hard to state that this is not a government. It's hard to say that this is an attempt at establishing a government. The prophet Yeshaya tells us, speaking of the Gula HaAsido, the prophet tells us, V'atem Hori Yisrael, the prophet speaks to the mountains of Eretz Yisrael. He says, An Bechem Titeinu, you should grow, your branches should grow, and give forth fruits for the Jewish people who will be living in Eretz Yisrael. All of those years that Bnei Yisrael were in Golus, until Hakomas HaMedina, the Pasuk in the Teicheche was fulfilled, the Ha'aretz Tihi HaShemama, the land was desolate and absolutely nothing was growing, all the time that it was in the hands of the non-Jews. When the Jews took hold of Eretz Yisrael, right before Mechamet HaShechrur, right after, things started to grow. So the Talmud comments in Gemara Sanhedrin in the last Perek, where the Gemara discusses, how do you know when Mashiach is coming? So the Talmud tells us that this is the best siman, this is the best sign to know, when this is the Ketz HaMegula, this is clearly the beginning of the end. The prophet Yeshaya says, Hari Yisrael An Pechem Titeinu, when the fruits start to grow in Eretz Yisrael, and the peiros are growing, and the tfu is growing, and things are growing, and you have a kibbutz Golias, then the prophet promises, V'lo yinotshu od me'al admasim, the Jewish people will never be sent away from Eretz Yisrael again. So obviously, according to the promises given to us by the Nevi'im, by the Navi Yishayim, by the Navi Yecheskel, you meet all of the Nevi'im, they say the same promise. There will never be a third Churban HaMedina. So we know, based on the Nevu'ah, that the establishment of the Medina in 1948 will clearly lead to Melchemes HaMolek and to the binyan of the Beis HaMikdash. Since the Beis HaMikdash is Gula, so the establishment of the Medina was the Aschalt of the Gula, and that's exactly what we are celebrating on these two dates. The halacha tells us another din that applies to Aschalta de Gula. The one din is that when you are faced with an Aschalta de Gula, you don't have the obligation to, but you are permitted to establish a yontif. Like the Chachamim in the days of Mar Chavies to establish the yontif, and it wasn't in violation of Eila HaMitzvah, She'ino Ve'ila Shoy L'Chadish Dova Me'ad. The Poskim point out that there is another halachic ramification to a matzav, to a situation of Aschalta de Gula. The Chasam Sefer points this out, and the Darkei Tshuva, the Munkacher points this out as well in his Tshuvas and the Minchas Elazar. When you are faced with a situation of Aschalta de Gula, it is forbidden to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to stop the war. The Gemara says, Melchomas are Aschalta de Gula. So whenever one is faced with a war, so you pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the war should stop. We don't want to have any wars. We don't want to have any korbanos. People get killed. Chalila v'chalila. So one should daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should stop the war. So Chasam Sefer, and if in his Sefer HaZikaron, in his diary he writes this, and it's printed, it's available in the stores. And the Munkacher writes this, in his Tshuvas, and Minchas Elazar, they say, you're not permitted to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to stop the war. But if you'll ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to stop the war in Eretz Yisrael, what you're asking in effect is that he should slow down the Geula. We have the obligation to hasten the Geula. Now, we don't have too much control over the Geula, but we have the obligation to do whatever is within our control to hasten the Geula. What can we possibly do to hasten the Geula? So the Rambam writes in one of his letters, we can speak to the one in charge, we can speak to the Rebbe Shlomo, and daven to him as we do every day, as Tzemach Tovet Avdecha Meheres Atzmiach, and we Yerushalayim Mircha Berachim Intosh, we daven to HaKadosh Baruch that he should bring Mashiach and build the Beis HaMikdosh. And the Rebbe Shlomo has control over the situation, we don't have. So the most we can do in a positive sense to hasten the Geula is to daven to the Rebbe Shlomo as we do. But to prevent the Geula, that we have the ability to do, and we have the obligation not to do that. So when we have a war, Rachmana Litzlan, which represents Aschalta de Geula, so these poskim say it is forbidden to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the war should stop. It is forbidden that we should try to slow down the war, that we should stop it. We have the obligation to proceed to the best of our ability, to fight through the war, and to hasten the Bias HaMashiach and the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Now that to regard the print ads in the newspaper, and they quote from the Talmud. They say that we follow in the footsteps of the Tanoim, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he was faced with the Roman armies surrounding Yerushalayim, gave over the whole Medina, gave over the Mokam HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash, he surrendered everything to the enemy in order that they shouldn't have any war, in order that they shouldn't kill any lives. So that the Tarikarta always write in their ads in the newspaper that the Israeli government should do the same. Why do they keep on fighting with the PLO? Why do they keep on fighting with the Arabs? They should follow in the footsteps of the Tanoim, Rabbi Yechem and Zaka, and all of the other Tanoim, that they gave away. They gave away the whole Medina to the enemy. So why shouldn't we do the same? This is a good point. But we have to know what the answer is. The answer is a very simple one. The halacha only requires that we sometimes have a mitzvah to fight a war if we think in advance that we're going to win. There is absolutely no mitzvah to fight a losing battle. It's a devil pashut like that. So the Talmud tells us in Gemara Gittin that in the days of Rabbi Yechem ben Zakkai, in the year 70, when the Roman armies were surrounding Yerushalayim, it was clear to everybody that the Jewish government would not be able to last. And if they would hold out, the Romans would just wipe out every single Jewish life. So in such a situation, when you know in advance that you're fighting a losing battle, so of course there's no mitzvah to fight a losing battle. And when you visit in Matsada, when you go touring in Eretz, those of you who will go this summer to visit in Eretz Yisrael, and you will take your tour of Matsada, so your tour guide will tell you what happened in Matsada, that these people were surrounded by the Roman soldiers and they refused to surrender, and they knew that the Romans were going to kill every single Jew, and they refused to surrender and they were all wiped out. And then your tour guide will tell you a second later, and these group of people did not follow in accordance with the Tanoim. They were a group of Isiim, a sect of Jews who didn't follow the Rabbanim, because the Rabbanim would have told them, as Rabbi Yechem ben Zakkai told the people in Yerushalayim, that you don't fight a losing battle. If you know that you're going to lose the war, so you don't fight. But right now, the war that's being fought in Eretz Yisrael is being won by the Jewish soldiers. They're winning the war, they're not losing the war. So whenever the Jewish people are fighting a winning battle, then they have an obligation to continue fighting. If it's a war that's an Aschalta de Geula, as the prophets clearly describe it, this is the Aschalta de Geula, this Medina is going to lead up to the Mechias HaMolek, which will lead up in turn to the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. That is the Geula, and this is all Aschalta de Geula. So we are forbidden to stop the process or to slow down the process. If anything, we have the obligation, if we know how to do it, to hasten this process of building the Beis HaMikdash. Some point out, but if you fight a war, lives will be lost. So the Torah has a principle of pikuach nefesh. We know that if one's life is suffic in sakon, if there's any doubt that a Jew may chalila lose his life, so the halacha says that you're permitted to violate the laws of Shabbos and the laws of Kashrus and the laws of Yom Kippur. And practically all of the Taryag mitzvahs, with only three exceptions to the rule. So can it be that we have an obligation to fight a war knowing in advance that we're going to lose Jewish lives? So the answer is, of course, That's obvious. Whenever you fight a war, the Minchas Chinuch and other commentaries point out, everybody agrees to this, whenever you fight a war, you know in advance that Jewish lives are going to be lost. How can the Torah ever give a mitzvah to fight any battle? Why don't we just say, put down your arms and surrender? Pikuach Nefesh overrides all mitzvahs of Melchama. So obviously, the nature of the mitzvah of waging a war is such that the principle of Pikuach Nefesh is suspended. The only question is the land, is the government of Eretz Yisrael at the present time in a state of war, or is it in a state of peace, according to Halacha? If we should declare that the situation is one, that the Medina is in a state of war, then that's the Halacha. Whenever you're in a state of war, you have to ignore the Sakanas Nefashis of the individual people. If you should consider that Medina Yisrael is now in a state of peace, there's no official war now. If we should consider that Medina Yisrael is now in a state of peace, and we have incidents, as we call them, we have incidents in Eretz Yisrael, it's not a war, then if you have an incident, then you should give away the whole Medina to the Arabs, who are making the incidents, making the trouble, in order to save the lives of the Jewish people whose lives are the Sakona. The Mishnah tells us himself, in the Chizkiyahu HaMelech gave away the gates, the golden gates of the temple to Melech Ashur, in order to bribe him that he shouldn't attack the Jewish people. And the Mishnah says the Chachamim were angry at Chizkiyahu, at King Chizkiyahu. Why? The halacha, what he did was correct theoretically. You give away the whole Beis HaMikdash, but the whole Medina Yisrael and everything to save the life of one Jew. He did wrong because God had promised, the Navi had told, Yeshaya Navi had told Chizkiyahu HaMelech, the Ganosi Al-Huir HaZos. God promised, I will defend the city. You don't have to worry. So if God promised, there's nothing to worry about. So why did he have to give the gates of the Beis HaMikdash away? But if not for the promise that the prophet had given, if not for the fact that God had promised he was going to defend the city, Chizkiyahu HaMelech would have done the right thing to prevent the war. When you're in the middle of a war, when you have a situation of Melchama, then the halacha declares that you have to fight even though you're going to lose individual lives. But if you're not in a state of war, if you're in a state of peace, and there's a chashash sakona to someone's life, then the halacha says, give away everything. So should we declare that Medina Yisrael is now in a state of peace, or it's in a state of war? This is the question. So you may remember, 18 years ago, when officially the state of Israel was in a state of peace, two airplanes were hijacked by Arabs. Two airplanes with Jewish people coming back from Eretz Yisrael to America were hijacked and were held out, were held in Jordan. Among the different people on the airplanes was Rabbi Hutner, Zichrono Livracha, who at that time was the head of the yeshiva Chaim Berlin, and was involved in many different Jewish organizations in New York and in Israel. And the people were really afraid, he was afraid, the people were afraid in New York, they were really going to kill him. They threatened to kill every single Jew on those two planes. There were a lot of, came out all Jews on the airplanes. So Rabbi Hutner was blessed at that time, and now he had a group of Talmidim who were extremely wealthy, who were very devoted to their Rebbe, and they were interested in putting together some sum of money, several million dollars, to approach the State Department of the United States to give this ransom money to the Arabs to redeem their Rebbe, to save his life. So the students of Rabbi Wittner approached the Rabbanim in New York at that time to ask, is it permissible to do this? Because the Mishnah tells us in Gittin that when the pirates kidnap Jewish people and they hold them, they hold up the Jewish community for ransom, they demand ransom money, so you're obligated to do piyun shvui, you're obligated to pay the ransom money to save their lives, but the Mishnah says it's forbidden to pay more than the person would be sold for on the slave market. To pay yosem mikadei demeyem more than the person would be sold for on the slave market is already an exorbitant amount of money, and if you do that, then you're just encouraging the people to kidnap more and more Jews, and you're putting more Jewish lives besakana. So you have to leave things the way they are and not ransom this person. So Taisus comments on that Mishnah and Gittin, that there is a story in the Gemara Gittin. Later, this is a Mishnah in Perek HaShaleach and Gemara Gittin. There is a story in Perek HaNizokin, a few dafim later, where the Talmud tells us that at the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdosh, one of the Tanoim, Rabbi Shur ben Hananya, saw that there was a young teenager who was taken captive by the Roman soldiers who knew Tanakh very well. And he was seen to be a very promising young fellow. And this Tana thought that if he's going to be in captivity, he will be killed, he will be ruined, he will be lost, he won't be able to develop his potential to become a great rabbi, a great Jewish leader. And if he would redeem him, he felt that he had potential of becoming a great Torah scholar. So he felt at that time that it was permissible for him and obligatory on his part that he should redeem him, and he gave fortunes and fortunes of money to redeem that young teenager. So Tesis asks the Kasha, but you're forbidden to give more, the Yosef Mikdei Demei. You're not allowed to give more than the person would sell for on the slave market. So Tesis answers, well, if the person is so important for the Jewish community, then he's worth more on the slave market. If you have a person who's a shoemaker, so how much is he worth on the slave market? So much money. Have someone who's a diamond cutter, how much is he worth on the slave market? So much money. If you have someone who's a big politician, how much is he worth? So much money. If you have someone who's a rabbi and a politician, and all these things all together, so he's worth more money. So if you have a person who's promising to be a great Talmud Chacham, a great Jewish leader, so he's really worth more on the slave market. So you have to give all the money in the world. So the students of Rabbi Huttner presented the Shaila to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, to other Rabbanim at that time, would it be permissible to give large, large sums of money to the State Department to transmit to the Arabs the ransom money to redeem their Rebbe. Ultimately, they presented the possibility to the State Department. The State Department said, no, we're not gonna deal with any terrorists. That's not the way you deal with terrorists. And that was the end of the story. But the Rabbana, before they approached the State Department, the Rabbana were discussing the permissibility of doing this. So at that time, Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky said that he thinks that there's no analogy. That even though one should assume, it's not a question of honoring Rabbi Huttner, it's not a question of kibbutzim, so we get them, yeah, kibbutzim ish. It's not a question, do we really hold that he's so valuable to the Jewish community or not? If you really hold that he's so valuable, then you're obligated to give all that money to save him. If you hold that he's not really so valuable, then you're forbidden. It's not a question, well, let's be machmir and give him the money. It's a question, either it's an aveira to give all the money, or it's an obligation to give the money. So several rabbanim thought that Rabbi Huttner had the status of an Adam Godel at that time. He was very involved in politics in the Jewish community. At that time, later in his life, after that incident, he became very weak. Spiritually, he wasn't able to be the great leader that he was before. But at that time, obviously, he was yet, they thought he would still be strong. And they felt perhaps it should be obligated to give all the money. And at that time, Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky said no. That they're making a basic mistake. That halacha, that mishnah, that passage in the Talmud of pidyon shvuyim, of redeeming those who were held captive by the pirates, only applies when you have pirates who are capturing Jews and holding up the community for ransom. But what if you have a war? Rahman al-Islam, let's say you have now a war in Eretz Israel. And they have soldiers in the army who are rabbonim. And they have soldiers who are big rabbonim. So what if the Arabs take into captivity a big rabbi who's a big Talmud Chacham? So would you say, you raise the white flag and you say, stop the music, stop the war, we have to do pidyon shvuyim, we want to negotiate with the Arabs and give them 2 million, 3 million, 5 million, 10 million, 10 million dollars in order to redeem this rabbi who's in captivity. After we redeem him, then we'll start shooting again. And then they're going to capture another prisoner of war, another rabbi. We're going to say, stop the war, we're going to give the enemy another 10 million dollars. So Yaakov Kamenetsky said, that's ridiculous. You can't fight a war like that by paying the enemy money in the middle of the war. You're just going to keep on making the war worse. So he said, it's obvious to him, it's a davar pashut, that is not the situation that the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara are discussing. The Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch discuss the situation of a group of pirates who are not waging war against the Jewish people, pirates. This was the history of the Jews throughout all the years. From the period of the Tanoim until very recent years, they would kidnap, they would capture Jewish people and come to the communities and hold them up for ransom. The Maharam Rutenberg was in prison for so many years. They had nothing against him. The prison guards were so kind to him. They would sit on the lift for him on Shabbos, and they would make the heat for him. They let the students come and he gave shiurim. It was wonderful there in prison. They just wanted to hold up the Jewish community for large sums of money. And he didn't let. The Maharam Rutenberg said, no, don't redeem it. And after, as he was about to die, he said, don't redeem me after I die. So these dinim in the Shulchan Aruch only apply when pirates are capturing an individual, they've kidnapped somebody, so then you have a mitzvah pidyon shvuyim. But if you're in the middle of a war, you don't have a mitzvah pidyon shvuyim, you have to fight the war the way you fight a war. So Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zechariah Levracha, said at that time that even though in 1970, officially it was in between wars, there was no war going on at that time, it wasn't Mohammed HaShechrur, wasn't Mechamet Sheish HaTayamim, wasn't Mechamet Shlomo HaGalil, it was quiet. He says, but there was never any peace treaty signed. It's, everything is a war. When they established the Medina in 1948, a war began, and the war just never ended. Egypt signed the peace treaty. So Egypt is officially not at war with the state of Israel. All the other countries are officially still in a state of war. They have different methods of waging the war. So when they wage a war, sometimes they sit with guns and they shoot. Sometimes they send airplanes and they bomb. Sometimes they throw bombs by hand. And sometimes they have terrorists. This is all part of the war. They have different methods of waging war. And the war is still going on. This is all a continuation of the war that began in 1948. That's why we cannot celebrate the winning of the war. First of all, when they won the war, they weren't defending any Beis Hamikdash, so there's nothing to celebrate. Secondly, they didn't win the war. The war is not over yet. The war is Geit Nochaltson, Ada Yom Hazeh. The war is still going on. We're not finished with that war. So Rabbi Yankov said at that time, and I think that he's 100% correct, that when you're in the middle of a state of war, as Medina Yisrael is right now, you cannot do any pidyon shvuim. Once you determine that the Medina is still in the state of war, then the klal applies that the pikuach nefesh, unfortunately the pikuach nefesh of the individual people, has to be ignored. That's what the nature of every war is, that people lose their lives. Now if we would declare that we're losing the war, so if you lose a war, of course the Neturei Karta are right, there's no mitzvah to wage a losing war. That's what the Talmud tells us. Rabbi Echman Zakkai surrendered the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim and the whole Medina, gave everything over to the enemy, because they all knew in advance that they were fighting a losing war. But Rabbi Nadiel Makula in Eretz Yisrael, everybody knows they're fighting a winning war. So if you fight a winning war, you have an obligation to keep on fighting the war. If you slow down, then you're slowing down the Gula. That's forbidden. That's what the Chassam Sofer says, and that's what the Lumkacha said. It's forbidden to delay the Gula. You have to do whatever is possible to hasten the Gula. It's interesting, one of the scholars from the late 1700s, Rav Chaim Yosef David Azuloi, he was a Sephardi who traveled all over the world and had access to different libraries, different parts of Europe. He was a mashulah for a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. So he traveled all over Europe in order to raise money. So every time he came to a community, so he would visit the all of the libraries that were available. So he quotes in his history book, he has a history book called Shem HaGdolut, that on the 28th day of Iyar, that's tonight, the Rambam always celebrated a holiday, believe it or not. What was the nature of the holiday? When you write a Sefer Torah, you have to have separate paragraphs at different spots. You have to have empty spaces to designate that you have separate sections, separate paragraphs. Sometimes these paragraphs are larger hafsakas, larger spaces, sometimes smaller spaces. Sometimes you have a psucho, and sometimes you have a stuma. So over the years, since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, errors have crept into the Sefer Torah, and sometimes we're missing paragraphs, sometimes you have extra paragraphs, sometimes you have a stuma instead of a psucho, sometimes you have a psucho instead of a stuma. So there were different traditions in the days of the Rambam. So the Rambam writes in the Yad HaChazok and the laws of Hilchas Sefer Torah, that in his times there were two traditions. There was a tradition of Ben Osher and a tradition of Ben Naphtali. These were two people who had a tradition, how to write a Sefer Torah. So the Rambam writes that we accept the tradition of Ben Osher and all of his psuchas and stumas, and we reject the other tradition, which has some slight discrepancies, the other tradition of Ben Naphtali. And since the days of the Rambam, that's what we really follow. We follow the tradition of the Masorah of Ben Osher. And the Achronim write, the Maharam di Lunzano writes, the Chidor quotes this in the Shem HaGdolim, if you want to check it up tonight, look. The Shem HaGdolim is alphabetically arranged under the names of the Rabbanim. So when he writes about Rabbeinu Ovadia Bar Tanura, under Ayin, Ovadia Bar Tanura, he writes the way he traveled to Eretz Yisrael, and he writes what he discovered. So under Ovadia Bar Tanura, he writes this whole story, that the Poskim write, it's Ke'ilu as if a Baskol had come down from heaven and said to us that we should follow Ben Osher's tradition rather than Ben Naphtali's tradition. And this is an enigma. Why Take do we follow Ben Osher as opposed to Ben Naphtali? What happened? How is the Rambam so convinced that Ben Osher's tradition is the correct one? So Rav Azuloi, Rav Chaim Yosef David Azuloi writes that he saw in a Chumash that was printed in Amsterdam, it tells you what edition it is and whose commentary it is, that one of the Rabbanim writes the following story, that after the Rambam wrote his Yad HaChazokah, that we follow the tradition of Ben Osher, he was told that there exists a manuscript of a Sefer Torah that was written by Ezra HaSofer. pretty old Sefer, written by Ezra HaSefer, in the beginning of the building of the Second Temple. So the Rambam either traveled to Britain, Rambam traveled to England, or he sent someone. Somehow they knew that there was an existence. That's why he writes it under Rabbi Avadya Bar Tanur, because the Bar Tanur also writes that he heard that in the land of Egypt there was a Ksav Yad of a Sefer Torah that came way back from the beginning of the Second Temple, from Ezra Sefer. So he writes this story in connection with the statement that the Bar Tanur writes. The Rambam heard of this manuscript and he wanted to check to see whether that Ksav Yad, that manuscript of Ezra HaSefer, this old, however old it goes back, Zolzayin Shen Ezra HaSefer, if it corresponds to what he wrote, that you follow Ben Asher. So he had someone check this out. And they checked every single psucha and stuma, and it came out that everything that Ben Asher said was correct. It was corroborated. And this was corroborated, he writes, on the 28th day of the year, on which occasion he made a party, and he celebrated, and on every consequent year he celebrated again. The Rambam had a Yom Tov on the 28th day of the year. It's interesting to note that when the Medina was established in 1948, we shouldn't forget this, we should remember, the Catholic Church was very opposed to it. We forget, it's 40 years, we forget, Baruch Hashem, books were printed about this. You must, those from YU, remember Dr. Feldblum, who used to teach in the yeshiva, lives now in Eretz Yisrael. His first wife, who was killed in a car accident, her doctoral dissertation was exactly on this topic, and it's printed and it's available. The response of the Catholic press to the establishment of the State of Israel. So she documented, and everybody knows that's what was going on, the Catholic Church was extremely, there was for saving the Jews, letting the Jews go into Israel, that the British shouldn't be so rough, they should let the Jews have a little rahmanis on the Jews, they were so tortured by the Nazis, but they were extremely opposed to establishing the State of Israel, because the establishment of the Medina is upgefrecht the whole religion. When the Jews rejected Oso Ha'ish, so according to the Catholic tradition, that's considered killing Jesus. That says killing means that we don't believe him. When you don't believe in their God, so it means that we killed their God. So the Jews are responsible for killing Jesus means that we haven't accepted their Avodah Zarah. We haven't accepted their God. So the Jews were then condemned to go into exile and never to return to the land of Israel because we haven't accepted their Avodah Zarah. Very fine, and they are the real Jews. The Catholics are the real descendants of Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. They're the real Jewish religion, and we're the fakers, we're the fraud. And then this was going on, this fraud was going on for a long time. Then in 1948, they're holding by establishing Medina, the Jews are going to come back to Israel, so it's going to be upgefrecht, the ganze religion. The whole Catholic religion bases itself on that assumption that the Jewish people are damned throughout all eternity not to return back to the land of Israel because we have killed their God. It means we haven't accepted Oso Ha'ish as our God. So that's why at that time they were extremely opposed to establishing the Medina. They didn't want it. It's going to slug up the whole religion. When the Medina was established, they weren't too thrilled about it. But they had no prayer. So they had to cover up somehow on their religion. So they said, yes, the Jewish people have a Pesachtika land, but they don't have the Beis HaMikdash. They don't have the Mokam HaMikdash. So thus Hasnish, they didn't really return to Eretz Yisrael. As long as the Jewish people don't have the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't return to Eretz Yisrael. So Basit God Gitar, there was a Mohammed Sheshet Hayamim, and they got the Mokam HaMikdash. So what do? The religion is right up different. So the Catholic Church, from Mohammed Sheshet Hayamim, Ad Hayom Hazeh, is insisting we have to internationalize Yerushalayim. And they say so. It's not that this is a hidden pshat that the Maharsha says in the Catholic Church. They say so themselves. Beferish, they print it in their newspapers. And if you ask a gala, if you ask a clergyman of the Catholic religion who understands what his religion is all about, many of them don't understand. As Rav Soloveitchik many years ago said about a certain conference of clergymen that took place when they were deciding to absolve the Jews of the guilt of killing Yoshke. So they quoted in the newspapers what one of the clergymen had said. So Rav Soloveitchik said that Galach was over, but he didn't understand what his whole religion is all about. But this is a double pasha. This is a yisoid in their religion. It's not that we're interested in understanding their religion, but we have to understand how it affects us. So their religion rests upon the assumption that the Jewish people will never get back Eretz Yisrael, or will never get back the Mokam HaMikdash, because we are condemned, we are damned to all of eternity because we haven't accepted their yoizel. So that's why after Yerushalayim was given to the Jewish people, and now this has demonstrated the authenticity of the fact that the Jewish people are truly the Jewish people, so the Catholic Church is still pushing to take away the Mokam HaMikdash from the Jewish people in order to save their religion. They have no teretz now, their whole religion is upgefrecht. So in a certain sense, the celebration of Yom Yerushalayim is like the Rambam celebration when he discovered this manuscript on the 28th day of Iyar. That's what he writes in his letter. On the 28th day of Iyar, he came to the realization that everything that Ben Osher had said, everything that he wrote in his Yad HaZoker regarding the Sefer Torah was authentic. That you have to have these psuchas and these tumas and not those and not the others. And it was a gloy milsalem afreya that what he had written in his sefer was correct. That's exactly what this situation is. When Yom Yerushalayim, when the background of Yom Yerushalayim occurred, when the Mohammed Sheshet Hayamim was won, and the Jewish nation got the Makom HaMikdash, it was a gloy milsalem afreya that the Mohammed HaShikrur was the Aschalta de Geula, that the tainus of the Catholic Church were betelim umulutom. And number two, when the Medina was established, it wasn't that clear at all that it was going to lead up to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's not an Aschalta de Geula. We have no right, as the Talmud tells us, we are not entitled to Eretz Yisrael if we don't plan to build a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have to plan imminently. We don't have the ability to build a Beis HaMikdash unless we have the authority of a Navi. We have to wait till the Navi will tell us. The Pasuk tells us that the Shekhin Siddush Rosh Al Pi Navi, you have to be authorized by a Navi. But if you don't plan to build a Beis HaMikdash, you're not entitled to take Eretz Yisrael. So originally when the Medina was established, there were difficult years. We weren't such babies at that time. We all remember what was going on. Different scandals were going on. There are scandals today also going on. But at that time it wasn't so clear at all that it was going to turn out to be a religious country that was going to be interested in building Beis HaMikdash. But after the Mohammed Sheshet Hayamim and the Makom HaMikdash was recaptured, there was such a hysterus with children. There were so many people. The standard picture that they have of the soldiers standing B'Gilei Rosh in front of the Kaisel HaRabi crying. A soldier standing B'Gilei Rosh is crying. Of course they were crying in their heart. They all knew that this is a Makom HaKudosh. At that time it was authenticated Igloi Milsalam Afreya that the establishment of the Medina itself was going to be an Aschalta de Geula. It wasn't going to be a secular government. And although it's still not the religious state that we would like it to be, no one is too thrilled about the religious state of the state. I always say the non-observant Jews are more unhappy. Against the government in Eretz Yisrael. The Frumma even have starker kindness, but the Freya, the non-observant Jews, have more kindness against the government. And they're reacting more severely than the observant Jews are. But it's clear from the fact that after Mohammed Sheshet Hayamim there was such a hysterus of children. And there was such, as years go on, there's more and more of a kibbutz goli, is that the words of the Nevi'im are being fulfilled. Hori Yisrael anpechem titeinu. The land is growing. Things are growing physically in the land. The Kibbutz Golias is beginning. Kibbutz Golias means when you have the majority of the Jews living in Eretz, so we don't have it yet. Das heißt noch nicht kein Kibbutz Golias. But we think that this is the beginning of a Kibbutz Golias. The words of the Navi will be fulfilled. V'lo yinotshu od mi'al ad mosim. The Jewish people are there to stay. And this Hakamas HaMedina was the Aschalta de Geula. And the celebration of Yom Yerushalayim is like the Rambam celebration on this day, tonight, the same day. When he found this Ksav Yad from Ezra, whoever it was, some old Ksav Yad, and he realized that everything that he wrote in the Yad HaZoker about the Ben Osher manuscript is correct and authentic, it was a simcha on the fact that it was a gloyim Muslim afreh, that everything that he had said was correct. So this is exactly what we celebrate on Yom Yerushalayim. That everything that we thought in the very beginning, that this Medina is the Aschalta de Geula, and this is going to lead up to Binyan Beis HaMikdash, was really so.
Mm-hmm.